All right, good afternoon, everybody. I usually live stream in the mornings on Fridays as well, so I was 1000% getting ready to do the intro of the other one. And I was about to tell you all good morning. I hope if you're watching this on the replay during the morning that you're having a wonderful morning. But we are here because it is that time once again. It is time to get spooky and it's time to get weird. It's Friday night, which means it is time once again for Friday Night Frights. And this is like the holy high month for us weirdos that like spooky nonsense. Because it is October, it is spooky season, we are in the midst of it. And so, what better way to get the ball rolling than taking a quick minute to talk about what we are up to during spooky season, how we are celebrating this oh glorious of months. Christian, I'll let you start.
Yeah, I guess my highlight so far is VHS Halloween. Talk about apropos for
Oh,
the
I'm
season.
judging you so bad. That
Go
was
ahead.
such garbage. Bro, what's the matter
You
with
are kidding.
you?
No, there's no way. This is the best one they've released ever.
It's not a high bar, bro. You're not helping yourself.
Oh, you're just contrarian for the sake of being contrarian. No, I'm talking about like
Me?
every segment.
Contrarian?
Yeah, never. Every segment worked for me, to an extent. I'm not saying everything's perfect, mind you. And there's definitely one that's a little more, let's say, not child friendly. And that is,
No, it's not.
But I enjoyed that. Go ahead.
I don't know. I'm hit and miss on VHS. Like I think it's a cool concept, and I love because I love anthology horror. I'm a huge fan of the medium that it chooses to express itself. But my biggest thing is like it doesn't it's not my flavor. And that's one of the beautiful things about horror. And it's one of the things that whenever I hear somebody ask me, how do I get into horror? Well, you kind of gotta like do a roadmap. That's why I made a video about that. Like I literally laid out a roadmap of like, hey, here are like pillars. It's not a complete exhaustive list, but it's kind of dipping into a flavor, trying
Different
it out,
genres.
seeing if you like this flavor, what all of those kinds of things. And VHS Halloween goes exactly to one of those flavors that I don't mess with. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, this is unoriginal. This is so reductive. And the people who I've heard from are like, yes, you are overthinking it. This is popcorn fare. This isn't high cinema. And I
Yes.
get it. I just don't necessarily enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, it's no trick or treat. I mean, if you want to talk about like the cream of the crop, I mean, that's probably it, for Halloween anthology.
Creepshow.
The Creepshow, yeah.
I liked the Creepshow. I liked the Creepshow TV show that they made for Shudder, I think it was. It didn't get much of a run. I think it got one or two seasons, but it was really good.
Was.
I am geeking out on retro movies in the theaters. Every year, a couple of cinemas around us do a collection of older films returning to theater, and I got a chance to finally complete the collection and see the entire Scream series in theater by seeing the first one. And that was the first time for me. For as much as I love the first one, for as much as that's not just a good horror movie, that's just one of the best movies ever made. Made by
Yes.
not just one of the best horror directors ever, but one of the best directors to ever do the thing. And so, getting a chance to see that for the first time in theaters, it was the only one that I had never seen in theaters because I saw two last year and then I started seeing them in theaters with three. I just dated myself. But yeah, so collections of classic cinema in theaters is kind of our go-to Halloween ritual.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
I'll give you a bonus opportunity to name something else, so that way you can take some of the stink of the judgment off of you with talking about VHS Halloween.
See, I was trying to think of what else I've watched recently. They're more horror adjacent, and one I like more than the other. I saw Him, and I saw Long Walk. Long Walk was a lot better. And once again, I would say there are horror elements in both, but not really like what I would say. This is the number one genre I throw at the film. But other than that, nothing I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, this is probably one of the heavier years that I've done for horror in the last couple, but that's partially because usually we do more like haunted house stuff and all of that. And this year we're not. But that obviously is only the opening salvo. We have a whole conversation for you guys tonight that is not just sitting here talking about horror movies, though we could do an entire segment around that. Let us know if that's something that you want to hear, because that gives us an excuse to talk about horror movies, and we're always down to
that. That'd be so terrible.
Yeah, right. So we are getting into this month's category, which is cryptozoology. And I posited an idea for a show a month or two ago, and covering the Kentucky Goblins for this week's edition. And we'll get into why what led me to that, which is a horse of an entirely different color. But you know, you out of the two of us are the cryptozoology guy. So talk to the people and let them know, what are Kentucky Goblins and what's the backstory?
So this is a difference of opinion on who had the idea for this episode and what category they think best covers it. I would have thrown this in ufology. Certain people we'll talk about later would put it in the paranormal. So we're hearing cryptozoology talking about the Kentucky Goblins. And you know what? There's enough there from other reports where I'm willing to throw a bone to some people, namely you, and say, yeah, we can stay here in cryptozoology talking about the Kentucky Goblins. By the way, it's my birthday tomorrow, so this is the birthday gift that I got from Joe. Watching the wonderful series that we're going to be talking about later on in this show. So here's the me segment. Here's what I care about the most. you know, the actual sighting, the actual thing that more, but whether it happened or not, sure, we can debate that. But the actual thing that started everything. Okay. So I have opinions. We'll get there later on. But for this case in particular, let's go back to the year 1955. It is midst of the Cold War. We are in the middle of Nowheresville, Kentucky. It's called the Kelly Hopkinsville. And I always want to add another S behind hop. And that's wrong. Hopkinsville area of Kentucky, which is on the western side of the state. I believe we're on Central Time around here. And, you know, the family that lived there, I believe the Sutton family, I'd have to look that up again. They are in their house. They have friends over. And in the middle of the night, I believe August 21st, 1955. And they start seeing these weird looking critters out there. And that critters is funny because this is one of the inspirations for the movie, which we've already talked about that on another show, but it's just weird how that happened. It's a synchronicity. Help me. Anyways. So they describe these creatures as very diminutive. The skin color is kind of, depending on the report, some people would say green, others would say more like a silver, some kind of glowy effect to some of them. Vary about 3 to 4 feet-ish in height, pointy ears, very, not gaunt, but slim. And what they would do is some of them seem to be wearing this kind of almost to some appearance, kind of like high tech gear of like not a radiation suit, but like something similar to it. And once again, this is going to depend on who you're hearing the story from. And earlier that day, during the night, some of the residents had reported seeing the fiery things in the sky. It's one of the reasons why this typically ends up becoming, a UFO report along the way, even though there's no craft seen in this sighting. So as these creatures are around the house, scaring the heck out of the people inside, we have, seven kids and five adults who are figure out what the heck is going on, but what are we supposed to do with this? And the creatures try and get inside the house. Now, being good old red-blooded Americans, someone tries to break into your house, what do? You shoot at them. Now, unfortunately, whatever the heck these creatures are, saw the bullets is kind of like, not an annoyance, but like, there was almost like a glee at certain points of time where they would get shot and they'd kind of like float away. The bullets would kind of bounce off and they just like go into the darkness of where people couldn't see them anymore. And judging by the fact that this is late at night, they had a hard time actually getting down the numbers. So it's all the place from either like maybe 12, 15, some would even say more. And this kept going on over the hours until eventually it came daytime and the family contacted local police who got involved. There was also some military police officers from nearby Fort Campbell who drove to the farmhouse that they were in. And they saw nothing, according to their reports, other than like some broken windows, holes in screen, more than likely from them shooting their guns. But they saw, according to their reports, nothing of left behind, no radiation or anything like that. And essentially, that the people who lived in the house left because they didn't want to deal with what was going on, which is another recurring theme for something else, another synchronicity, if you will. So as this was spread across the papers of the day, this created the term Little Green Men from different editors and writers just describing the creatures, even though, like, I think they were more silvery in appearance, if I'm remembering the original report correctly. So, as is often the case with news, whatever sexier, whatever sells more, that's what the people use. So Little Green Men then became something that would be known across the entire U.S. and eventually just became a part of UFO phenomena for years.
So, I had no idea what Kentucky Goblins were until a particular documentary was suggested to me. And that was the first time I'd ever heard anybody talk about. We'll talk about the documentary here in a little bit.
We will.
But I started looking into it. And there you're going to notice that some people are convinced that there is life among the stars. There are some people who will hear of something like this and want so bad for it to be Little Green Men that they would attribute this to ufology. When in all actuality, I'm not sure that actually fits the bill, that there's enough credence to give to that past. What seems like a lot of lore building with this one that you don't necessarily see with some of the other cryptids or paranormal conversations or weirdness or things like that. Not saying that that's the end all be all of the story here, but it feels like this one in particular, after the sighting, really benefited from adjacent lore, like area-based lore and like different things like that. And so why does it feel like the Appalachian region produces some of like the weirdest? Like it's not even that it's the most intense or the most or the scariest or anything else like that, but certainly some of what feels like the weirdest of the conversations that you're going to be having around cryptids and the paranormal and things like that.
I think the area kind of lends itself to that. I mean, this is a lot of it is virgin land as far as, you know, people, you know, just barely starting to, you know, have houses, at the bare minimum, a house in the area before you start even making towns and infrastructure and roads. So naturally, where would weirder entities be? Far away from civilization. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, huge Bigfoot reports. There's tons of Cherokee mythology of different, I mean, just to use them as one tribe of many who have reports all over the Appalachians of various things out there. You have the Brown Mountain Lights, you have plenty of UFO sightings, you have all these things kind of converging together in a place that's not like civilization, as it were. So it kind of lends itself to the possibility of something that we would not normally see being there, or that's probably where something like that would be, because it's away from us and it's us encroaching on them.
Yeah, I think there are some areas that lend themselves to the types of folklore that are born there, where you just look around and you're like, man, there's something about this. There's something about this area where I think I'm a little slower to just chalk it all up to myth and mythology. You know what I mean? Just like, there's just something about the area. And it would seem like when you dig into the area, it makes sense that a conversation about a local cryptid from that area would take a one of many approach to an explanation or something along those lines. Trying to categorize it seems a little more nebulous than some of the other stories or situations that you come across when studying the paranormal. It's interesting to me that this one feels like there's simultaneously more lore, but less actual hard sightings or like timeline in comparison to some of the other cryptids that we've covered over the time that we've been working together.
Well, once again, I'd argue because they're not actually cryptids, but that's its own thing. And yeah, the people have researched it before. I mean, it's not a modern idea to look into the case and actually committing to actually looking at that case, but that's another issue. In looking at, okay, what the heck is this? We have this family who is so rattled that they have left their entire home where they have lived pretty much their entire lives. Like, what could cause that to happen? Like, that's the kind of thing where you go like, oh, you know, dad owes money and I have to go on the run. Otherwise, you know, the Kentucky Mafia is going to come after us or whatever. Like, no, something spooked them. And you have like people like Project Blue Book coming in on the scene, which was huge in the 60s, of, you know, the official government looking at, you know, UFO reports and seeing if they were credible or not. And they called this one a hoax. On the flimsiest of reasons, they would offer explanations of, oh, the light they saw in the sky was just a meteorite or meteor. And, oh, they just misidentified great horned owls. And you know what? I'll give them this one. At least they didn't say it was a sandhill crane. But you're also dealing with people who live in this area. They know the animals. They know what an owl looks like. They know what an owl sounds like. They know if you shoot an owl in the face, that owl is going to die. So something ain't adding up over here on my end. So, like, I just can't get how you can dismiss this out of hand without looking at everything and say, okay, why would these people who've lived here, who know the nature around them, who know their capabilities, who know how to wield their weapons, why would they leave? Why would they think they're overwhelmed by something that's much smaller than them?
So I wonder how much of it, again, is lent into the geographic region. Now, we talked about the cave systems and the how all of that cavernous land, all of that stuff, it all lends to this overarching idea of mystery and intrigue and, you know, secrets and all of this sort of stuff. And you look at all of the information that's in front of you, and it's kind of easy to jump to conclusions based off of bad assumptions of the people that are telling the stories. Now, we don't necessarily have, like, the epitome of accents that represent our geographic location, well, our respective geographic locations. But I'm in the Northeast. Christian here's in the South. And I can tell you that to the interestingly enough, ignorant of this area, there's a stereotype for some areas of the South. And I wonder how much of that plays into the widespread distribution of a story like this. Because to somebody like you, you're bought in, you're sold out. You are convinced that it's all real. You think everything's a synchronicity. You are hooked like a mark. I get it. I understand. So to somebody like you, you of course know what a Kentucky Goblin is. You of course know the sordid history behind it, and whether it's this or that or the other thing, whether it's an alien or whether or not it's a monster or the mystery third option of an extra dimensional creature, which we will get into all of that. But I feel like this isn't one that's as widely distributed, and I'm wondering if outside of certain circles it more or less dies on the vine, or at least quicker, it more quickly ages, you know what I mean? And I'm not, please to all of you listening, don't hear what I'm not saying. Like, I'm not perpetuating the Southern stereotype, but I am going to be honest about something that exists.
I can guarantee that's part of the reason why some of it was discounted. You know, there is a stigma around the idea of the yokel Southerner, the hillbilly, the redneck who ain't got much book learning in his life, and therefore their testimony isn't as good as someone who went to an Ivy League school or whatever.
So something like this, right? It feels like you need to have an extreme level of discernment when trying to make heads or tails of all of this. And friends, if you want a, like, the benchmark, like the example of exactly not that, there is a docuseries. I'm struggling not to use the word mockumentary, on Amazon Prime called Hellier. And this was suggested to me when I was doing an interview on a friend's podcast. And I'll get into the what's and the where's and the why's of what we can learn about all of this. But I have to, you know, shoot down Christian's hypothesis first before we get into the fun stuff. So Hellier is a monstrosity. It is. it starts simple. It starts simple enough where, short of a couple of red flags, it felt like at first we were learning something. We were going to go on an adventure. It seemed like this was a group that was looking for credible evidence, especially when one of them is like, I'm skeptical of everything. And she's, I mean, she thought it was literally everything. So, like, I mean, again, it's not, I think she needs a dictionary. But, you know, it's I really thought going into this series that we were in for something at least reasonable. And what this becomes is a buffet of rabbit holes. It just is. So we get three main threads, right? We get the lead, we get the landscape, and we get the methods. You've got emails that describe goblins seen near mine entrances and woods. Friends, I'm not giving context for a reason. It's because there is none. The show literally just goes from point to point to point. There is no through line. Don't try to do it. You're going to waste your time. I thought about not telling you to do that and just watching you all get very, very confused, but I didn't want to do that to you. Anyway, so
you can do that
so
to me.
The team heads to that's well, that's because you deserved it. The team heads to Hellier, Kentucky to chase what they can verify, places, names, any witnesses that are willing to talk. And a lot of doors are opened and closed, and we go to the region where the mystery fits, and it's just a whole mess of it's a whole series of what if it's this and what if it's this and what if it's this and what if it's this. And so what they're doing in this documentary is leaning into the fact that it really does depend on who you talk to with this particular subject. Whereas I'll take something like Bigfoot, right? Bigfoot, generally, you've got a small handful of things that people tend to describe Bigfoot as. Short of some like wild and out theories, which exist absolutely, but generally it's some bipedal cross between somewhere on the spectrum of ape and man. That it's some flavor of that generally theories tend to fit into. With this, there are opportunities for this to get explained as actual creatures. There's opportunities for this to get explained as the after effect of rituals gone wrong. And then you have the whole ufology from outside of this world explanation. And one of the things that they posit that I appreciated when they were talking through the thing was that in the buffet, they left on the table the idea of extra-dimensional beings. Now, I say that to say, one thing you're going to hear come out as we get into what we actually think the Kentucky Goblins are is that I am very slow to say that I think that there's any actual evidence, any credibility to be given to life outside of this planet, outside of this dimension, becomes an entirely other conversation. I think more theoretical physics lend itself to the idea of parallel universes than theoretical physics that life exists outside of our solar system.
Yeah. This one's a doozy. I texted several things to Joe before we did this. We'll get to them over time. But wow. This series about broke me at certain points. I'm in it to win it. If they have a season three, I'm going to watch a season three. You know, I'm a sucker. I'm their mark. I'm still going to watch it. This is one of the most infuriating things I've ever watched in my life. Like Joe said, that you start off with people, you go, okay, this is who I'm like. And I'm not going to use proper nouns that much because I don't remember people's names as I'm getting older. Like I said, I'm going to be 35, getting on 75 at the end of this week. So proper nouns kind of elude me after a while. But they have this cool idea of there's this mysterious person who has dealt with this problem of these little goblins on his farm years removed from the events of Hopkinsville. Cool, let's go and investigate. And then you don't really explain the original sighting that well. You get to the town and like you do like one or two episodes actually exploring the place you start at. And then there's, oh, look, squirrel. Oh, look, squirrel. Oh, there's 50 squirrels. Let's all follow the squirrels at once, knowing we're going to get lost along the way and lose some of the squirrels, defeating the purpose of why we're chasing the squirrels in the first place. Well, the rabbits or however, whatever animal you want to throw in here for the hunt. And as someone who likes structure, you don't have to be the most structured thing in the world, but I would like you to have a cornerstone at least.
I want you all to know something as you're hearing this description. Okay. So I had gone through this interview and was smartened up to this probably about a week or so before the last time that we recorded. And it was during that I talked to Christian about that. Now, mind you, I was only a couple of episodes in by this point, but I was already hooked. And mind you, this show, it begs you to give it the benefit of the doubt. It really does.
Yes.
In those first couple of episodes, it really begs that of you. You get smacked across the face for it. You get punished for your goodwill. There is nothing good that comes out of your charity. You will get kicked in the John Heim parts for being kind to this show. I promise you. But yep. I got a couple more episodes in and I'm like, I'm not going to warn him about and you're going to notice something. Okay. We keep using a word that is not normally used in the English language, friends. You're not going to go to a cocktail party and start hearing the word synchronicity thrown out like it's water. Y'all, you have black shoes. I have black shoes. That's a synchronicity. You thought about the color blue? The sky is blue. Guys, that's a synchronicity. You know what I mean? And what gets me and stood out like a sore thumb is they set this up at the very beginning. And the dude, it was red flag. And again, you really, really want to give this thing the benefit of the doubt, especially because everybody positions themselves at first as a
reasonable,
but part of the ensemble cast. And except for the one dude with the hair, the guy who like actually starts off this thing, the first guy that you hear from that they don't explain to what in the wide world of sports is anything about how these guys know each other or what any of this is. Like, they don't care about you filling in the gaps. That's not what we're here for. We're here for some History Channel After Dark nonsense. Like, this would have lived, if this would have been made in the early 2000s, this would have lived on Animal Planet or History Channel After Dark, like something like that. Spooky America, whatever, something like that. It would have been a billion-dollar idea if they would have just done this in the early 2000s. But the show presents the main guy in this light where he literally says, you hit a certain age and you just all right, give me all the weirdness. You just want it all to be true. Look, when you're talking about the paranormal, There are 87 different flavors. And if there's anything that you guys should take from us, yes, we do hear, like, if you haven't gotten the gimmick, this is a comedy podcast. We enjoy laughing, and more than anything else. Yes, it's informational, but we're talking about things that go bump in the night, guys. Like, come on. You know what I mean? And some of this stuff, in order to do it and to do it well, we can't be taking ourselves too seriously. And so, we like to laugh about this stuff. But you notice how in the ecosystem of people that are connected to the network that this show lives in, people aren't beating down our doors because we're the weirdos that like studying this stuff. Because we actually care about the authenticity of talking about it. Because, yes, you get weird looks whenever you start talking about the paranormal, especially in Christian circles, when everybody and their mother just thinks it's all demons and angels. And there's literally no other room for anything else 90% of the time. We care a lot about the authenticity of the actual research part, the actual paranormal, the putting the research in paranormal research. And with something like this, when you hear somebody be like, I want it all to be true, stop, turn off X-Files. Like, you're not allowed. You've lost your card because you put yourself up to evaluation of whether or not you understand the fragile line between fantasy and reality. That's what you've done. And that's juxtaposed immediately by his partner. I don't remember. She's like, yeah, I know he's so quick to hear people. He's so quick to listen to everybody's story and all of this sort of stuff. I'm the skeptical one. I look at everything through a skeptic's, and I'm like, okay, cool. We got an odd couple pairing. I'm cool. Like, that could make for some fun back and forth in the whole.
I mean, it's win it at that.
Yeah, like, you got me as far as that goes. I'm cool. Again, it flushes out to be exactly not that. And every 30 seconds, y'all, if we told you to play a drinking game, we would have to tell you to get the lightest alcohol content that you possibly can, and for the love of God, sip. Because if you start doing shooters, you're not making it out of episode one, and I mean that. If you drink every time that they say the word synchronicity, you will get alcohol poisoning before you are out of the first friggin' episode. And I promise you, I wish I was doing a bit. I'm not doing a bit. And so when you hear that edge in Christian's voice when he addresses me when it comes to this series, it is because I did not warn him about any of this.
There are words I could use, but I love you too much to use them. Yeah. When I texted Joe, I had finished season one, and there was one moment that I was broken, and I'll talk about that after I say this. But this, I said, you know what? Whatever. I'll just take whatever they're throwing at me. But the first episode of season two, forget the first season. If you want to die in a drinking game, you can do it with the word synchronicity in episode one of season two. And I said, Joe, what the hell? Essentially. I was more verbose than that, but that was the summation of what I was saying. And they said, yeah, I know. Take that, jerk. But what got me? Yeah, if you're a fan of the show, I want to say this right here and now. We're not haters. We're not here to say you wasted your time watching it. Like, we wasted our time watching it. It's like, no. There's still something to be gleaned somehow from all of this, and we'll get there. But what broke me, what completely and utterly broke me, and thank you, shout out to sublikescript.com for having the seasons, just season one up for the script of the show. Because it saved me from looking through every single episode, because I think I said it was season two when I was texting Joe. I was like, what? No, that's not right. It's the last episode of season one, which I think is episode five. And it's after they're having a conversation with a fellow investigator named Tenny on the phone. And I think Newkirk is the name of the main guy. And I apologize. Yeah, I should know everyone's name. I should have a list right in front of me. I don't care. And this is why I don't care. This is what he says, verbatim. We were never going to get closure on this case. Tenney was pretty clear about that. There was no closure. And there's no closure really on any paranormal case. There's plenty of people who go into a house and claim that they have sent whatever's there to the light. But then 2 weeks later, another group comes in and they're experiencing the same phenomenon. I think any closure in the paranormal is done for our sake. We're the ones who decide if there's closure to it. And that isn't what is happening in reality. So talking to Tenney was a good endpoint for him to be like, you didn't do anything wrong. You guys got what you were supposed to be there for. It just wasn't what you expected. And you're not going to understand it in any kind of linear fashion. You might, years down the road, you might look at it and go, that's why we were there. That's what we were doing there. There's no closure, but there's solace in the fact that other people have been there and have been to that edge and are there to pull you away from it before it gets concerning. Know what he just said there? It's the journey, not the destination. And I stood up from my chair. And I'm not saying this for theatrics. I pointed it, my finger, at my computer screen. And I said, the hell it is. I had to pause the show. It's like, the hell it is. But your job as a paranormal researcher is to find as much closure as possible. Yeah, there are some things out there. We're not going to know everything. You know, I understand that. I don't like it, but I understand it. But you don't get to just throw up your hands and say, well, like, we got a participation trophy. What? Why? Why?
I'll add some mustard to that.
Go ahead.
He's sitting here reading that off, right? And the whole thing reads like a dude doing a victory lap. like this sounds like a dude doing like, oh, look at all this stuff that we engaged with. Look at all of the stuff that we experienced, all of that sort of stuff. Now, mind you, within the context of this series, they plug in this weird time jump halfway through like season one. And literally nothing happened. They go there, they experience some loose stuff. They get people that aren't like, they are in no way, shape, or form interested in dealing with this group of people who are here trying to chase down ghost stories, if they're actually doing that, until they get some random one-off people or they, you know, that sort of thing. And so this whole thing is presenting his closing statements as if, look and see everything that we've accomplished over the last stretch of time and all of that kind of stuff. Here's the thing though. This is part of what goes into the context of pre me getting recommended this. So I was on a friend's podcast who has shout out to Podcast of the Paranormal. They are just getting their wheels turning, but they are already doing awesome work because they care about authenticity. They understand something very key. And if you did not know this, then here's your time to be smartened up on paranormal shows and think anything that is showcasing evidence of any kind, regardless of whether or not it's fake or not, regardless of whether or not it's real or not, regardless, that matters not. If you are being shown any sort of evidence, I swear on a stack of Bibles, it took longer than they're showing you to get that evidence. I swear. And it's what it is there are hours, days, weeks of content that are all spliced together to give you a 30-minute highlight reel. Why? So that way you tune into the next episode. It is not about the authenticity of the moment. It is about keeping you watching the program. That's literally the entire idea, is repeat viewers, keep you coming back for more. That's the entire gimmick. And how do you do that? Well, one of the ways that I don't understand, but people tend to think that they can do, and that it's compelling, is when you've got all this stuff going on, right? And you've got this big climactic moment, and did I just hear that? And they play a friggin' sound clip over top of the friggin' audio, so that way they want to what, emphasize it? You're just, I can't hear what just happened. You're acting like the friggin' devil just came out of the wall, like Pazuzu himself is there to be like, hey, what's up? I'm damning you all to hell. You guys are acting like you opened up a portal to the sixth dimension. Screw the fourth or the fifth, but we gotta have this little soundbite that plays over top of the audio, distracting from everything. You've got a friggin' hell mouth that right 2 feet to your left, but you're more interested in the audio feed to add the dramatics to the situation. I have a pet peeve. It bothers me. And part of that is because I come up in the era of Penn State Paranormal and Lorraine Warren. And part of what this show so reminds me of is when you're out there in the early and mid to the, and this is what we talked about on the show. This is one of the things that we literally talked about on the show, is ethics in the field. You have to have ethics if you are going to step into the field. And I don't care. You can draw the line wherever the hell you want to draw it. Whatever's real, whatever's fake, whatever you think works, whatever you think doesn't work. Not the topic of conversation right now. Whatever it is show ethics, show respect, especially to indigenous people, y'all. That's a side note, that if you're going out, if you're screwing with the paranormal and all that kind of stuff, there's things that the whole group of people that the lore is built around say, don't say the name of the thing. Don't be an ignorant person and then go around saying the name of the thing that other people are being like, hey, don't do that, out of respect. And also because, like, you say it and you're screwed. So, like, even if you're playing with maybe, do you really want to gamble? That's all I'm saying. I don't want to wake up to anything cryptid or paranormal related in my face. I don't want that smoke. Why do I want to play with that? That's its own conversation. Anyway. I care a lot about it because my friend and I come from the background of Penn State Paranormal, but an offshoot of the main group, the one that Ryan Buell led up. We weren't a part of that group. We were part of an offshoot group. Now, Ryan Buell is one of the most notorious people in that space because of all of the things that he has done. He has done a lot. His rap sheet is long, and we're not going to get into that. Same thing with Ed and Lorraine Warren. This was the era where everything, the evidence was the thing. Getting out there and getting evidence, getting out there and getting the smoking gun, getting out there and getting a recording, getting out there and getting a picture, getting out there and getting video. And then I promise you, it was like the magical power super friends. Like, if everybody there had an eighth of the psychokinetic abilities that everybody claimed to have during that, then we were like the friggin' Power Rangers. Like, seriously, like it was absurd. We were the goth Avengers at that point. Like, come on. But and you didn't care. You're sitting there with your phone and you're twisting it sideways and you're zooming all the way in. And is that actually something? But like, if you've got to do all of that, then like, you're looking at a pixelated granular piece of a photo, y'all. And that's the quality of evidence that we get from this show. So we're taking the mick out of this thing. And because, like, honestly, I think they posit the interesting framework, but they do so in such a way that they ruin any level of credibility that they attempt to have. And it seems like they're actually trying to establish real credibility for themselves, because they have like a Facebook group and a community and the whole nine yards. And apparently they're even worse there. That's even worse than like anything that you see in the show.
I can believe. Yeah. If you're wondering why we're as passionate about this as we are, let's just stick to the paranormal side of things, cryptozoological, whatever. We are already in a sphere of influence where we are not taken seriously if we say, I look into this. I like researching the Loch Ness Monster. I like figuring out whether or not this haunting exists. And to live in that sphere is to have ridicule thrown your way. You know what? Some of it, whatever, it just kind of bounces off of me. It comes from ignorance or from people just being too skeptical for their own good. Sure. But then there's another part of it that comes from, oh, so you're into this, so you must be like XYZ. You must be like, and this was actually thrown at me, and I didn't know the context of it years ago. Oh, so you're just like the people who did Hellier. And I said, sure, I guess. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Not knowing it was an insult until having watched the show myself. It's like, you just believe anything. You'll throw this grainy image on screen for 5 seconds and then say, oh, that's proof of ghosts, or that's proof of the Kentucky Goblins that we got rid of like 5 episodes ago. Or we're talking to Indrid Cold now and his sons. And no, we can't stand that because, once again, we're in a field that's already not seen as credible by a lot of people. So when you have evangelists, as it were, for the paranormal, for the spookier things, acting like fools, it makes us look like fools. And now going on the actual Christian spiritual side of things, Joe and I know of many people across who would say that they are Christian and would open their big dumb mouths and say not a word that Jesus has ever said, nothing that would ever back up anything he said, or that this prophet said, or God said, or whatever. And the world already doesn't like Christianity by its very nature, whether they recognize it or not. But when you have the wrong person speaking, everyone goes, oh, well, if he's like that, they must be like that. They must be unreasonable. They must think that science is bunk. They must think that the world is flat, or they what have you. And you're having to jump over hurdles you shouldn't have to jump over because someone else said something stupid. And now it's out there in the ether, and it's your problem, and it didn't have to be your problem if they had just done their work.
Yeah. 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 And it's funny because, like, getting reconnected with them and doing the podcast and all of that sort of stuff, they asked me on the air, would you ever saddle up and do it again? And the most authentic answer that I could give is it would have to be in the context that I am expressly helping, whatever that looks like. I don't even know exactly what that would look like, but I'm not in my early 20s looking for answers to what goes bump in the night. I screwed around and found out, like, I saw the thing that goes bump in the night. And I think it's important that if there's any measure of, like, credibility that you give to this, give to this field, that you realize that you have a burden on you to be work within the level of ethics, work within the level of authenticity, work within the level of good faith, that you aren't making this even worse for the other people that do take this seriously in the field. And to anybody who would hear us and be like, why would you take any of this seriously? I would just encourage you to take a look at something. We will move on from this, but I encourage you to take a look at something. When you look in the Bible And if your main argument is from a biblical standpoint, take a look in the Bible and tell me how often Jesus says, "Don't mess with this stuff because it's fake." I'll wait. Like that's I'm just saying, like that's just the reality reality of it. Now, does he say, "Don't do it?" Does he say, "Don't mess with this?" He doesn't say it's fake. And that's that, like there's stakes to this. Like there's actual stakes to what we're doing here. If you like, so one of the methods that they show on the show that I really wanted to talk to you about because I wanted to see what you thought of this. Now, mind you, I have a little bit of a different POV on this because of what else I've heard outside of this specifically. But so they call it the Estes method because they actually are the ones who first posited it because they did it at the Hotel Estes or something like that. They're the ones that are credited with first introducing this means of communicating with the paranormal and all of that. So you're blindfolded and you have headphones on. And basically what it does is it does a constant rotating bandwidth frequency scan where you're getting like bits and pieces and sound like constant feed into your senses, and the idea is you pick up on what you're hearing in between the static. It is I would love if I were to do it again, if I were to saddle up again to do it. Because I've heard a crew do this, and they do it with a level of like very obvious criticism to like what is actually happening. Not criticism in a it's all fake sort of way, but criticism in a way that means that you are actually discerning what's happening here, that it's not just by default, you know, all of that sort of stuff. But I bring this up to say that let's say you do that and you actually are communicating with something, and there was some audio that, yeah, you've got to take it on good faith that the person that you're listening to didn't doctor the audio and all of that sort of stuff, but they have recordings that they've played on the air from an investigation where it really feels so I should add the person with the headphones on and the blindfold cannot hear the person who's
Yes.
standing next to them, and the person standing next to them or within the same sphere is asking questions. So the idea is almost like a form of EVP where instead of just asking questions and hoping that the recorder picks it up, the idea is that that person who's wearing the thing could be getting communicated with. And there's some call and response action that happens in this that I think is just, again, I go back to, huh, that's weird. You know what I mean? Like it certainly is more compelling than literally anything that they show that when they're using this method on the show. So what are your thoughts on, because they pretty exclusively just do the Estes method in these various locations, other than that friggin' they're in a cave and they're like, "Did you hear that?" "No, I didn't hear that." "Did you hear that?" "Oh yeah, I heard that." And she literally just turns her opinion on the drop of a dime, and then she's the one who starts working everybody else up. "Oh, but it was right there. It was right next to us." And at first they're saying like it was on like the other side of the cave. There's cameras rolling. You should keep your story straight while the camera's rolling. Sorry, just saying. Anyway.
They do it at least twice that I can remember. And once in the first season, once in the second season, maybe two times in the second season. I'd have to watch it again, but I'm not going to do that. I don't hate myself
I'm
that
not
much.
going to do that.
And when it's first presented, I'm like, okay. I've never heard of this before. This is fascinating. Let me see what happens. And you the reactions, and you know, say, hey, we're putting the ear, you know, headphones on, and eyes are closed. They can't read lips. They can't hear what we're saying. So the idea is to have some other thing channel into your frequency and speak through your voice.
Sure.
So there's the obvious idea of hoax. I would say this is one I would discredit. They don't strike me. Maybe I'm just too naive for my own good. And Joe's thrown that accusation my way several times over, some of which is even true. They don't strike me as the people who would want that, who would want to fake something like that. Now, is it possible? Yeah, they're human beings. You know, deception is true. It's a real thing people do, especially if it means clicks, if it means selling more, whatever. But ignoring that for a second, let's say that that didn't happen. Maybe you have a different opinion on it than I. But when I hear the idea presented, our core thesis is remove me from the world, my understanding of the world, my perception of the world, to allow a foreign entity of unknown nature to utilize me. My response is, I guess my favorite word of the night, hell no. And why would you ever think that's a good idea? Even if there was something out there that would actually answer your questions, which presumably happens, how can you trust what's being said? How do you know it's the thing that you're going after? It could be a spirit. It could be a demon. It could be an angel. It could be Indra Cold and his sons or whatever. Or it could be someone who knows how to possess other human beings and is just as flesh and blood themselves. I don't know. Why would you ever put yourself in that circumstance of removing your own will and allowing something else that you don't know and don't understand to then overtake you and respond to people? I was like spiritually creeped out by that. It's not scary, like watching it. But like the idea, actually thinking about what they're doing creeps me out. So yeah. I'm a nay.
So for me, it would be less from that perspective, and it would be more from the perspective of I'll lend an ear for 30 seconds with the idea that I don't trust anything that's coming out of your mouth, because I've said this before and I will say it again. And this is where I get myself into trouble with paranormal, with like ghost hunting enthusiasts. I don't ever think it's your dear Aunt Sally. I don't ever think it's great Aunt Mildred. I just don't. I just fundamentally do not think it's an earthbound. It is a human spirit that you are communicating with. So the question then becomes, and this goes to needing to have ethics and authenticity, because you are dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight. You are doing the thing. And if more than one thing can be true, and I'm right about the it's not your Aunt Sally bit, but I'm also right that you're actually communicating in something, then what in the hell are you talking to? Like, I get it. It's not lost on me. But I think that's the power of discernment. I think the power of discernment is if you are equipped to do it, if you are equipped to ride into battle, then ride into battle and protect yourself. Don't be an idiot. There was a dude that's a part of this crew. They get it on the air. And I know the guy, and the guy's a very nice guy. He's got he's the living embodiment of a golden retriever. He is a golden retriever in a man's body. Like, I promise you, he just is. He's a good time. He is. He's a friggin' blast. He is so hyperactive. And he's one of those guys that's just like, he's literally in the session and he pops off with, "Go ahead and use me to communicate. Shut the hell up. Like, What's the matter with
you?
No! You know what I mean? Like, that's the bridge too far, friends. Like, friends, that's where we go. And we're like, nope, because I'm not an idiot. And I don't want to be shooting pea soup out of my mouth. Like, I'm cool. Like, I don't need that. I don't want that. No, you are not welcome. I am not inviting you inside. Whatever peace needs to happen, that we're just not, you know. You know what I mean? But like, also, if I can position myself through a discerning mind to lend an ear to something that's outside of the realm of the three dimensional, I'm curious. You know what I mean? Like that's at least what I'm gonna say.
But listening, not speaking with their voice is what you're saying. Like not having them speak through you, listening to what they'd have to say.
So you say something to me, and then I hear you. I hear what you say, and then I repeat what you said. Not, I'm submitting myself to
okay.
you to be able
yes.
to speak and convey and use my mortal body. No, we're not the open sign, no vacancy. Promise.
Okay.
You're good. Like that part of it. That is where the hard line is, and that's where I think some of the other applications that I have heard are more compelling, because they're only using it as a tool. They're not immediately throwing all of the religious subtext into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
They're just saying, this is a tool, and maybe through this frequency, something on the outskirts of what we know as temporal reality can speak into, and then I can hear what that person's saying because of this tool, and then convey what they're saying for them, adjacent yes. from them.
Okay, yeah, that's a much better compromise. I still think we're dealing with something a bit above our britches, but at the end of the day, if I had to, I could compromise with that.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I, like, as far as the punching up portion of the conversation, and that's why, like, to me, when you're exploring this stuff, like, just tell me you don't that you don't respect it, or that you're an idiot, one of the two, because like, you're just putting yourself into harm's way, and you're putting your crew into harm's way, and you just kind of normalize. That's why you enjoy being around the people that you investigate with, because sometimes it's just screwing around in the dark with your friends. Like, you're not gonna come face to face with a demon, you know what I mean? Like, that's sometimes that's just not the deal. And normalizing that is okay. We don't need to make spooky nonsense out of every single thing. You know what I mean? And so I for those of you that have been listening for the last hour, and you're like, you talked about Kentucky goblins for like 30 seconds, because I promise you, everything else about taking the mic out of this and what we were actually like talking about the implications of this sort of thing is way more compelling than talking about the actual the actual thing of Kentucky goblins. Because, like, honestly, here's the deal, right? So they're little creatures, whatever the hell they are, right? So you're either talking about little cryptids that wreak havoc and all that sort of stuff, you're talking about aliens, or the mystery third option. And this is where we're going to shift gears into, okay, so we've taken the mic out of this whole thing. Like, this whole mockumentary is absolute nonsense. But we walk back and separate out and say, hey, just because of a bunch of bad faith actors, we can't turn around and say, every single solitary bit of this. And I would call them, for the record, because season two is just following the bullshit trail. Like, it's just following the nonsense of all of the emails and the secret identities and all of that sort of stuff. Like, there's nothing, we have lost any grip on actual, like,
what?
Documenting like paranormal research that has gone out the window. And so I would call them bad faith actors because they try to present themselves as being fully legit, and I don't think that they're fully legit. And so looking at that, we can't then turn around and say, oh, we think this entire folklore out of this geographic location is nonsense just because of some people. It would be like saying that every single ounce of, I'll call it religious haunting, like any bit of that is nonsense because the Warrens were bad faith actors. They were bad faith actors, but we also need to understand that more than one thing can be true at the same time. And so I'll tip my hat first that of what, of where I go when I hear about the Kentucky goblins and really the meat and potatoes as to why this thing was recommended to me was when we were doing the investigation, or when we were doing the interview, I had made a comment because we were talking about how back in the day there were some places that we went that, like, you have to pay attention to your team, to your feelings, to your instincts, the whole nine yards. And there's this one joint that we were at that I was just like, no, man, this is not good. This is not, there's nothing good happening here. And then we had another person who was there who was trying to say the exact same thing. And she was completely and totally ignored and all of this sort of stuff. And it's the one spot where I'm like, I wouldn't even want to drive through there. Like, I just don't. It doesn't interest me because all of everything that I'm hearing suggests to some really evil stuff, not just things that I'm personally hearing, but I'm hearing from other people that are all lining up, mind you, of things they're hearing, things they're seeing, things they're experiencing. And so it's one of those places, and they had talked about this, like, really wild and out experience that they had, that they came across something. They weren't sure if it was a cryptid or what exactly it was, but they described it differently between the two of them. And they never give the explanation as to where this is taking place. And I never gave the explanation on the air to where I was talking about, mind you, we told the stories in two different, like, it's, I don't know, four or five podcast episodes before my interview that this comes out. And I had no idea that it was the same geographic location. It just pertained to this whole idea of listening to your team. And so, after we got off the air, they're like, why was it such and such a, like, where was it that you were talking about? And why is it this location? And they got it. And
yeah,
the thing that they had experienced was very much akin to a spiritual force that was not trying to parade itself as human. And this is an area that has a very high amount of neo-paganism in it. And a lot of the time, neo-paganists are kids that feel lost, that latch on to the practice of the occult or Wicca or what have you. And not everybody is like, in it. Like, there are some people that, like, they find their way, and that is their religious practice that they keep on practicing, and that they're serious and that they learn. A lot of them are kids that think that they are touching the darkness when they're screwing around with things that are so far beyond them, but they don't take the time to actually realize what they're doing. And so one theory is that there was a portal opened in that area to something that could be a lesser spirit, a lesser god, and they like it keeps like drawing them, like, because they've gone back a couple of times and they've gotten like, come to the water, come get in the water, come, like this baptism sort of feeling, and it's all about showing submission to this thing. And I 1000% think there's room in the conversation to start to go there, of this thing that got let out of its brought into that space, can't leave that space, but is now in that space, and whoever opened that door either doesn't realize or is too inexperienced to know how to close it. Now, I understand that some of what I'm talking about sounds like spiritual nonsense and mumbo jumbo. But again, we go back to, why do we get so passionate about these things? Why do we care so much about the integrity of the field? Because we've seen some things, or things make sense to us in a way that says, hey, the faith I have can live in an ecosystem where more spiritual entities exist outside of God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, the enemy, angels, demons, and whoever else you want to throw in there, depending on your flavor of theology. That's what we're getting at. And so my personal thought process, and this is where I picked up on this, and they're like, we want to see what stands out to you and why this is what, like, it, like what you get out of this and all of that. And don't get me wrong, 3/4 of this we took the mic out of the thing because it's hogwash, because it's nonsense and all of that sort of stuff. But a broken watch is right twice a day. And they start to get into some of the religious weirdness about occult practices and about rituals and things like that, that I would be inclined to believe that somebody opened a door that nobody closed. And whether that means creatures from a different plane of existence, and they actually are creatures, or beings, and they're not creatures, but they're intelligent. I don't know. Do I think they came as from outer space? I don't. But I will be the first one to admit to you that if you're trying to poke around and find the limits of my skepticism, meaning where my skepticism starts to kick in the hardest, it is ufology. I promise you it is. I wear that openly, because I just, it's kind of one of those things that if everybody could do it, then how come we haven't met any of them yet? Oh, but what if we have? Yeah, I don't see any evidence of that. I see evidence, but I don't see anything that even starts to sniff in the direction of proof. Like, nothing that even remotely stands on its own without a million what ifs and maybes and all of that sort of stuff. And I'm just saying that if it's so feasible, then why is that not the most logical conclusion to land on? That's what I'm saying. But I think more credibility can actually be given to this idea of, you've opened a door to something that you cannot close. You cannot put the genie back in the bottle. And now you've got something that lives in that area that now populates that area.
When it comes to the goblins themselves, I do go more ufological as far as my answer, given, you know, what was seen in the sky, given their appearance, the state of their dress, how the bullets didn't seem to affect them or anything like that, how they propelled themselves. Sure. I can't, number one, prove that. And number two, I can't say that's the absolute, because there are other possible explanations that aren't just saying they just shot at an owl. They could be some subterranean goblinoid creatures that live in a region where there are plenty of caves to hop out of, may exist in a way that we are foreign to because we don't live underground. So maybe they have some adaptations there that we don't see here on the surface world. Now, I'm not going to go and say, oh, they're just there from the hollow earth. Don't take your steps too far. Maybe, sure, maybe, but I'm not going to actually go that way. Then, of course, you have the extra dimensional idea, which is a possibility. These, whatever they came from, whatever these entities are, they have different rules. And they're able, or maybe because they're here, they have to work under different rules compared to where they were. Sure, I can get behind that. I can also get behind the fair folk idea. And that's kind of an amalgamation of not only just the fair folk kind of mythology we get from the English Isles and France and bits of Scandinavia, but like I'm talking worldwide. Like I would throw yokai in here if we were talking in Japan. I would even throw Native American entities, First Nations entities, that maybe there's no record left behind because, well, there was no one left to write it down after a certain amount of warfare and a genocide happened in that way. Or maybe what we do have has a fragment that could possibly be related to one of these, but I don't know. It could be one of those things. But to do what they do in regards to this kills not my enthusiasm for it, but I definitely know there's other people out there who take it less seriously because of how it was handled now. Now that I've done my research into this and have watched everything that they've put out. And that irks me because instead of asking questions and putting possible hypotheses about what these origins of the creatures could be, it is, well, now it didn't happen, even though the people who cited this 70 some years ago had nothing to do with this documentary. With the people who recorded this over the years have nothing to do with the documentary, like who actually put their A game and like making sure the message was passed down. This is the sighting. This is what we saw. Yeah, there may be some contradictions because this newspaper reported that this person said this. You know, it's going to happen with reports regardless. But you kill credibility of the potential that this is true when you fumble the bag like this so hard. And I don't even know what I can say that I haven't said before. It just really, really irks me. Because, like you said at the start, you want to believe in them. They present themselves sort of rationally. Now, in hindsight, I can look back at what was said and say, okay, that was for the camera. Or you may legitimately believe that about yourself. But when you start going out there talking about how it's the green man, as the great god Pan, which, oh, by the way, free information for you, Pan is one of the only Greek gods we know is dead, according to the mythology of the Romans, at least, because in, it was during the reign of Tiberius, the sailor called Tamas came and said he got a word that Pan is dead. And I was like, okay, sure. So maybe he got resurrected along the way. Or maybe this is the tulpa of Pan or whatever, but if you're going to assume that. But do you see where I went from where I started to you start introducing these ideas and you sound more outlandish? And maybe even that would be true. Maybe even there was an entity similar, or maybe even the Pan himself there. Sure, but you've killed any credibility that it could be true with how you presented the information.
Exactly.
So now I don't trust you as much as I should. Your job is to convince me that I should be listening to what you have to say. I don't even have to believe at the end that your assertions are correct. You have to at least make me believe you believe it because of XYZ versus Oh, because I'm just old now and I want to believe everything. Yeah. I don't know. Yep. Take it from here. I can't. I'm going to repeat myself.
Yeah, I mean, and that's about the size of it, right? So, like, in the midst of talking about a cryptid, you get a free explanation as to why you need to have ethics when diving into the paranormal. We're not here to tell you whether or not you should go ghost hunting or not. We're not here to tell you what's real and what's not real. We're here to tell you that if you do decide to engage with the paranormal, then do so with the level of credibility that you want to be considered with, because it does matter, and people do watch. I promise you, people are watching. Whether you realize it or not, people are paying attention, and you will get labeled. So I think that's about the size of it, right? Because there's no real level of certainty about all of this as far as the goblins go, but it's an opportunity to take into consideration the realities of what it means for a subject to become the subject of, like, documentaries and research and shows and all of that sort of stuff, that you need to chew the meat, spit out the bones when you see this kind of stuff, and leave the door open that it could be a great many things, because you just simply do not know. And coming forward with all of the confidence in the world, see, that's the thing, right? Like, we take these people and we're like, oh, what they said this thing was exactly what, like they know what they're talking about. So, like, they're the ones that were there. And so we don't necessarily vocalize that we're giving that much credence. We just end up giving that much credence because it's said over and over and over and over and over again. I'll go back to Ed and Lorraine Warren. Why do you think that everything was a demon? It's almost like they grew up during the time of the Satanic Panic.
They propagated some of it themselves.
I'm just saying, like, that everything in the culture that they came from was a demon. Every bad thing was evil. Everything that was outside of God has to be something that is dangerous and all of that sort of stuff. I fundamentally believe that there are, do they deserve our worship? No way. But I also don't think that every single spiritual entity is out for malicious means.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, that's, there's got to be a level of nuance that you carry into this. And so it is interesting if you allow yourself to kick the can around while keeping a discerning perspective. That's where you can enjoy something like the Kentucky Goblins. So as you think about this subject, I want you guys to sound off below. What do you think it is? What is this, something that you had ever heard of? Because I'm real curious about that. Who all, because this is not the Pacific Northeast or Pacific Northwest, any of that sort of stuff. Like, it's none of the European waterway monsters or any of that sort of stuff. This is something that is less mainstream, and I'm wondering how many people really actually knew about this as a thing. And just keep it weird, man. But do so with a level of credibility. That's all I'm saying. So, with that,
read responsibly.
Enjoy spooky season. Yeah, responsibly. So with that, y'all, enjoy spooky season. This will be the last broadcast before Halloween. So happy Halloween to you all. Let us know what spooky nonsense you are getting up to this season. We give our recommendations at the top. Hopefully you find something good to watch. I certainly know it's not going to be Hellier, and don't look for it to be something good with if you go watching that. I'm just saying, we have warned you. But until next time, y'all, stay spooky. Peace.